Like, I want to create art that is breathtaking. I want to create art that is extraordinary. Like, and then when we pick prices, it matches that versus when, like you said, if we're in this content construct, it's like, okay, what's affordable? I don't want to be affordable. I want to be
Right.
extraordinary. I want to have an incredible impact. I want to move mountains. I want to lead a movement. And when you operate with that size of vision and let yourself have that size of vision, money is, again, it's just another way for money to find its way to you because you're not shrinking it down.
Hello, and welcome back to the Joyous Path to Millions podcast. I'm super excited for today's episode. I'm joined by a special guest. We'll be diving into an interview. So Nicole Mitchell is here, and I'll have her introduce herself in a moment. But just in case this is your first time tuning into the show, we've gotten a lot of new listeners lately. I just want to say hello. I'm your host, Emily June Wilcox. I'm so happy that you're here. I'm a money healer and business mentor. I guide women on the joyous path to millions by healing their money wounds and helping them step into new paradigm wealth. I really believe that when we allow ourselves to receive money doing things that we love, doing things that foster our creativity, that feel more effortless, and like the gifts that we're here to bring and the experience that our soul is here to have, that it really uplevels the entire planet, that we all benefit from that. And so the purpose of this show is to highlight stories that showcase that, and also just for us to have transparent conversations about money, because we don't heal our money wounds if we don't know we have them and we're not willing to talk about them. So Nicole, thank you so much for coming on the show. Can you introduce yourself to the audience? Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so nice to meet you, Emily, and so excited for our conversation. So it's crazy because I am known for a very sensational tagline. I am known as the pastor turned stripper. And at the end of the day, I feel like what that tagline captures is my essence of going from a good girl to a free woman. And when a good girl becomes free, it gets the world's attention, and a woman will also take a lot of flack for it, will have her reputation torn apart for it. But it's really become one of the biggest blessings and gift in my life because it's helped me find my power, find my voice, find my profit, unleash new levels of pleasure. Like, it became the very thing that gave me everything I wanted, but at first had to take the world by storm.
Oh my gosh, what an intro. I love that so much because I mean, I grew up in really rural Southwest Michigan, and although my family was not overly religious, I ended up going to a babysitter who really, she was just a stay-at-home mom to her four kids, and then she watched me. And so in many ways, she was wonderful because she was very loving and she treated me just like one of her children. The sort of downside to that, although I know I'm sure my soul chose it for a reason, was that she was very, very religious and kind of fringe Christianity. You're not really baptized unless it's a full submersion, people speaking in tongues, like just the whole nine yards. And so she was indoctrinating and exposing me to that the same way that she was with her children. And like, out of love, we couldn't drive without praying and putting a hedge of angels around the car. And it was like, that was supposed to be a good thing. That was supposed to protect us. But what I experienced actually from that was so much guilt, so much anxiety. Like, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? I thought I already asked Jesus into my heart, but now people are still asking me that. So maybe they know something I don't know and he's not actually in my heart. So not to make this about me, but I'm just so curious, like, how did you go from such religious indoctrination to setting yourself free? Because that's a massive transformation.
It's a massive change. And as you were sharing what you just shared, which I like can so relate to that babysitter, I'm like, that you just described my upbringing. I find we cap money in so many ways. And for me, I had to find or learn that my profit really came through my pleasure. And we are so afraid of pleasure in my religious upbringing. And I think in society as a whole, and I think part of the patriarchy knows, like, to keep a woman under control, to keep her small and afraid, is to make her fear her own body, make her fear her own sensuality, make her fear her own desires. And when you make a woman small and afraid, it's really hard to make a lot of money. And so my journey really was a reclamation of my body and a reclamation of my pleasure. And that led to massive profit. And once I experienced massive profit, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the secret everyone needs to know. Like, it's the very area where you think it could not be found that it is found. It's the very thing that we tell God, universe, our best friend, oh, I would never do this, that we are often called to that, which is why we have so much resistance to it. So I love now being provocative, because I know when you feel this strong response to something, there's something there for you.
Yes. I've learned that over time too, that like the sacral chakra is, it's like pleasure, power, and money, baby. Like they all live in the same place. And so, I mean, I guess you can do whatever you want. But when you try to avoid a piece of that, there's a reason that our vocal cords look just like our yoni. And it's like when we're suppressed sexually, usually our throat chakra is also closed down as well. So like, did you have a moment when you were like, I don't care who judges me, like I have to explore who I actually am? Like, tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think we all reached that point. I think I was very, very dedicated to the script that had been passed down to me, that my job was to be a good girl, marry a good man, be a good wife, and be a good mother. Like that was the pinnacle of my entire experience, was to be good for everybody else. My desires, my pleasure, my being was never taken into consideration. And I devoted myself to that script because I thought, this is it. So I married a good man. I had three babies. I was a stay-at-home mother, and I was absolutely miserable. And I felt duped and I felt lied to. Like I had spent my entire life, all 4 years of college, even graduate school, like on this mission to meet the best man and be the best mother. And then I arrive and it's nothing like they said it would be. And there was a little bit of an unraveling there. And people, when you become a mother, people are like, oh, it's postpartum, or you'll love it. They'll gaslight you into like, no, this is, you actually want this. Instead of believing a woman when she says, I don't think I want this. I don't think this is actually, if I can redo this thing all over again, I don't think I would sign up for this. So there was like a stirring and awakening after you check all the boxes and you arrive and it's nothing what you would actually want it to be. It forces you to question and reevaluate and reflect and like, okay, if this isn't it, what is? And so at that point, I was willing, because I was so miserable and felt so duped, I was willing to walk away from it all. And I was equally terrified. I was partially thrilled, mostly terrified to feel like I'd been lied to my whole life, because now what do I know to be true? What even is true if my core truths that were passed down to me feel like lies to me? And so I gave myself permission to be like Elsa. It's literally how I felt. I'm like, go into the unknown, let it go, see what you discover about yourself. And in my tagline, makes it sound like I found it overnight. It was a 2-year journey of releasing and letting go and crying and being afraid and being scared and being excited and really returning to my body and like these desires that had always been there, but I had to stuff them down in order to be a good girl. And then they came rising to the surface. And now I had a decision to make about what to do with those desires.
Wow. So all of this exploration is happening after you're a mother of three. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just bow down, because you talk about the levels of conditioning. And there's religious conditioning, and then there's good girl conditioning, but then there's also all kinds of conditioning on like what's appropriate and acceptable once you're a mom. And like, I remember even in childhood, if a mom wore a bikini instead of like a one piece, that was like, oh, who does she think she is? Like, she's a mother. Like, there's these ideas that like, once you're a mother, you should be even like more conservative. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we expect a woman to mute her sexuality whether by the time she gets married, becomes a mother, or reaches a certain age. And it's so fascinating, because our sexuality is what helped us get married and helped us become a mother and become all that we came here to be. And it becomes the very thing people expect you to shut down. And so when I left, I also used to live in the Midwest. And 4 years ago, I moved to California. And literally one of the top things on my bucket list was wear a bikini at the beach. Because bikinis were not allowed in the Midwest. And I'm like, I'm going to wear a bikini, and not just bikini, I'm wearing a thongkini. Like, there was this freedom of like, I'm allowed to be all of me, not a muted version of me.
Yes. So was part of this self-exploration was like trying pole dancing? Like, where does the stripper part fit into the equation?
So
you can't tell us about pastor to stripper and then not tell the stripper story.
I love you. Yeah. So I started with acknowledging these desires I've had since I was a little girl. I was in middle school talking to my Christian church girlfriends, telling them I want to be a stripper because I thought every girl wanted to be a stripper. I thought this was like a common thing. And then the looks they gave me and the horror on their faces, I immediately recoiled and realized, oh, I'm a freak. Like, there's something wrong with me. Like, oh, this isn't a thing. So ever since then, I've had to suppress it. But all of my favorite movies in my very religious, very sheltered upbringing was like Coyote Ugly and Moulin Rouge, like these very sexual, sensual women. And like, they demand an audience and they take the stage and they're paid for it or like tipped for it. Like, I've always been drawn towards that. So I was kind of going through this like unraveling in my 30s and just kind of figuring out who I am and what the fuck I want and where am I going with my life. Those desires came back with fire. Like they had been boiling under the surface. And it's like, I desire to be sexy. And I don't desire it in the way that society shames women. Like, you're an attention whore. Like, you have daddy issues. Like, I just like being sexy. I like turning heads. I like feeling good in my body. I love receiving compliments. And if you want to tip me and pay me and give me gifts, why not? Like, I am so open and available. So it started with me just learning to like wear lingerie again. Because lingerie, at least for me, the only time you were supposed to wear it really was for your honeymoon. Again, my sexuality was never for me. It was always for someone else. And yeah. Me choosing to wear lingerie in my mid-30s, after I've had my kids, after I'm married, was like, this isn't for you. This isn't for that. This is for me. And I booked a boudoir shoot and I had never felt more sexy in my life. And as I'm literally peeling off layers, I remember thinking, this is what I meant to do with my life. Like, I came alive. And then when I moved to California shortly after that, I did my first nude photo shoot and I bawled tears of joy afterwards. And I'm like, this is literally what I was meant to do, to live in this like holy temple. There's no layers between me and the divine, no shame, no guilt. There's just pureness here. Like, and I knew it didn't make any sense to my former community, my church. I was a preacher at a mega church, you know, like it was so against what everyone would expect for Nicole Mitchell. And it made total sense to my whole and to my soul. And so it was this evolution of like wearing lingerie, nude photo shoots. And then this is when I learned about OnlyFans. And I'm like, a safe place online. I don't have to go in person. Like, that made so much sense, even though I wanted to be a dancer, where I, as a mother of three, want to be safe, be with my kids. There's no middleman. I determine my rates, my hours. And so that platform gave me a way to share the side of myself and make money. And that's now where I do almost all of my adult work.
Wow. Oh, I love that so much. And I'm actually just really curious because I don't know anyone personally who's doing OnlyFans. I know about the concept of it. So, I mean, I guess, first of all, my question is just like, how much money are you making?
Yeah, I make anywhere from $30,000 to $100,000 a month.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
And this is like we touched on it before where you were like, oh, like my pleasure is what unlocked profit. And it's for all of us, like our pleasure can look different, but it's like when we are in our magnetism, when we are doing the thing that we love more than anything, that there's a part of us that would do it free because we love it so much. That's actually the easiest way for money to flow to us in these really large supplies.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone go rewind 15 seconds and re-listen to everything you just said. That is it right there. Because the point of me isn't everyone should be an OnlyFans model, though I do recommend it. The point is, follow your pleasure. Your pleasure unlocks your profit. And I jokingly give credit to Instagram for all the money I make, because I would post all this content for free on Instagram. Like, for it's like, that's how much I love it. I love what I do. I want the whole world to see my art. I have no problem with that. But because they have censorship, I was forced to move to a different platform, which is now has made me a lot of money. So like, it all started though with the courage to follow my pleasure. And it started like breadcrumbs. Like, it wasn't like, I know I want to take it all off and pay me lots of money. It was like, I think I want to feel sexy again. Mm-hmm. I think I want to feel good in my body again. Like, I think I want to wear clothes that don't make me feel like a mommy, but make me feel like a mistress for me. When I did my boudoir shoot and I paid to have a book made for me, like, oh, is that for your husband? I said, oh no, this is for me. I still have it at my desk right next to me. Like, this holy work is for me first and foremost. Yeah. And because it fills my bucket and I experience so much pleasure, it's from this place of overflow that everyone benefits. Now there's, of course, always to monetize and make money off of it. But it started with the courage of, can I follow my breadcrumbs of pleasure and trust that it's not leading me to my ruin, it's leading me to my rising. In my rising, of course, I'm going to be supplied for everything I desire. The money, the resources, the love, the support, the relationships, the connections. There is no loss. There is only gain of everything we're meant to have because we're finally who we're meant to be.
Ugh, I love it so much. And the way that you talk about it, my art, I really love that. And someone posted on Instagram somewhat recently and was like, would you guys stop saying my content and start saying art? And I really loved that shift because it is true that often our art is our content, but also that our content is our art. But when we use the word art, it's like it feels so much more devotional and it feels far less, there's no quota on art. It's not like I have to post my art this many times for the algorithm. You wouldn't say that.
And art is priceless in many ways. Like, you get out of the constructs of affordable and we move into the paradigm of extraordinary. Like, I want to create art that is breathtaking. I want to create art that is extraordinary. Like, and then when we pick prices, it matches that versus when, like you said, if we're in this content construct, it's like, okay, what's affordable? I don't want to be affordable. I want to be extraordinary. Right. I want to have an incredible impact. I want to move mountains. I want to lead a movement. And when you operate with that size of vision and let yourself have that size of vision, money is, again, it's just another way for money to find its way to you because you're not shrinking it down. And I always tell my clients this, like, don't shrink your desires down to be palatable. Don't shrink yourself down to make others comfortable. It's the very fact that you're edgy, right? And that you have such a big desire and such a big dream, like you open the portal for so much money to come to you than when you try to shrink it down to please mom or please your best friend or please your kids.
So let's talk about that for a minute because you're talking about your rates not being affordable and just wanting it to be extraordinary. And working with so many women, I often find that like it's a journey to get there. We start with undervaluing ourselves and then it's over time that we start to realize, hang on a second, that these prices don't actually reflect the impact. Mm. So what was that journey like for you? Because you were saying like, wait, I was posting this for free and now all of a sudden there's this platform to monetize it. Like, did it sort of take you by surprise that there was this much demand or you could make this much money? Like, how did your money mindset change?
My money mindset changed massively. We were on food stamps for 9 years. In my 20s all the way to my mid-30s, like we were so poor. And when I started hearing my children, oh, we can't afford that because we're poor, everything in me like freaked out. Like, that's not the identity I want my children to have. And so that's when I discovered personal development and I realized like all my money blocks or my money wounds and like how unworthy I felt for around money, how unsafe I felt with money, how undeserving I felt. Like, I had to really like heal that I'm inherently worthy, inherently safe, inherently deserving. If there's anyone who's going to do good with money, it's Nicole Mitchell. Like, if there's anyone who knows how to be a good money manager, it's Nicole Mitchell. But these were all ideas I was trying on because I had the opposite. I thought I was probably a terrible money manager because we've been on food stamps for 9 years. And so I had to work on like feeling worthy and safe and deserving and good with money and believing it before it showed up. And then I had to believe that there was plenty of it for me because I was so afraid of taking from anyone. I was so afraid of exploiting someone and then leaving my people behind because I'm also queer. And in our queer community, poverty is the norm. Like, vast majority of queer people are very poor. And when I decided to become rich, I was rejected by many of my queer friends. And it was devastating because I had already been rejected by my church. So I turned to my queer community like, oh, you want to be rich? You're a capitalist now. You sold your soul. And they pushed me out. And I just, and then when I was posted online about healing your money mindset and changing your life and making money, they would come after me publicly on Facebook and like attack me. And it was so painful. And yet I stayed the course because A, I knew I deserved to be rich. When you look at all the rich people in the world, why can't Nicole Mitchell be one of them? I knew the good I could do in the world if I had more money. And I stayed the course. And what's so crazy is some of the very people that came after me publicly on Facebook signed up to become my clients. After a year of tormenting me and watching me, they realized this isn't a fluke. She isn't a fraud. holy crap, she did it. Can I work with you, Nicole, and you show me, which was like one of the most redeeming moments of my career.
Yes.
It's like there was so much pushback, but at the end of the day, you are the only one who knows what's meant for you. You are the only one who knows what you're capable of. And I reached a point where I was so sick and tired of being told what I could and could not do with my money, with my body, with my life, with my freedom, that I reached a point of like, I do care what you think, but I care now more about what I think.
Right. I love that you use the word redeeming and redemption, because this is something that I teach inside of Money Wound Medicine too. But like, we have to heal our own judgments about rich people, and we've got to forgive ourselves for like the projections that we've put on them. And so much of that is like, it's really rooted in jealousy, but even deeper than that, it's rooted in, I don't think it's possible for me. And that is so deeply painful when you see someone else have something or doing something that you really, really want, and you don't think it's possible for you, that out of self-protection, you make the other person wrong, because that just feels so much better to make them wrong than to really sit with like, oh my God, I want that so bad, and I don't know if I can ever have it. And so like, to have people go through that transformation with you, from telling you you're wrong for wanting it to acknowledging their own jealousy, acknowledging their own desire for it, and then actually going through that forgiveness process with you and learning from you so that they can do their version of it. I mean, that it's just so incredible.
It's huge. It's huge on their part. And this is something I love. Like a long time ago, I stopped trying to convince anyone of anything. I'm not here to convince. I'm here to be. And if that inspires you, you are welcome to join the ride. If that triggers you and pisses you off, you are welcome to unfollow and unfriend me. Because I notice the moment I go into convincing mode, it does the opposite, right? It pushes people away. It makes them dig in their heels. Same thing that you try to convince me something I don't believe in, I'm going to dig in my heels. I'm very competitive. I love being right. And then I reach this point where I realize two things. One, it feels really, really good to trust the genius and the timing in the other. Even if they're coming against me, I just surrendered them to their timeline. They're not ready yet. So why am I going to try to engage and convince them? Because I wasn't ready. A few years before that, I was so convinced I was a victim of my story. I was so convinced the whole world was against me. I was so mad that I was on food stamps. I was not available for a different paradigm. I was not available for a different reality. So neither were these people. So I just surrendered them to their own timing, to their own genius. And because I view them as a genius of their own life, because I believe we all have a genius inside of us. I think people feel that in my world. Like, you're so freaking smart. You're so freaking capable. You are so freaking wise. No matter where on the money journey you are, you have something amazing to offer the world. And like, I remember wanting to have a lot of money, and I was treated like I was dumb, and I was treated like I was inferior. And it was such a turnoff. And like, when I moved from Minnesota to California 4 years ago, I was making like 10K months, like huge, huge milestone as a mama on food stamps, like unbelievable. That felt like $1 million to me. And the California realtor that was helping us move out here, once he saw my income, totally turned on me and treating me like I was like some homeless person, unworthy of respect and dignity, and lied to me and deceived me and was just like so shading the process. And by the time like the whole thing finished and we had the house and whatever, I was like, I'm so sad for him. Because I will never work with him again, and I will never refer him. And he has no idea what multimillionaire is in the making. He has no idea, because he decided to treat me as a certain way because of where I was in my money journey. So in my world, when people step into my world, no matter where you are on your money journey, you are a genius. You are so so wise. And I actually want to know that. Like, tell me, teach me, what is your perspective? What is your understanding? Because you have something to offer. So that has helped turn some of my haters into my biggest fans, because I treat them according to their geniusness and not their level currently. Because where you are is not ultimately who you are. It is just where you are. And you are so much more and bigger than that.
I love it. So much wisdom there. So I'm curious, as you were stepping into the OnlyFans journey, you're starting to make good money, and forgive my ignorance in this question, but was there ever, like, I don't know if people are paying for like a specific photo or specific video, or if it's like more of a membership, but I'm curious if there was like ever something that you posted or like a special thing that people could access by paying more money that made you a bunch of money and like totally caught you off guard. Because I feel like I've read something on the internet of like someone who I feel like she made like 30 grand by letting people watch like a video of her sleeping. And I was like, okay, that woman's a genius because we all sleep every night. And she just made 30 grand doing that. So I'm curious if you have like any equivalent kinds of stories.
Gosh, I love that. And it just shows you can make money literally doing anything or nothing.
Literally anything.
Or grinding or posing with clothes off or being fully clothed. Like there's just no rules when it comes to money. And this is like the biggest mind breakthrough I had is like we were taught, at least I was taught, money can only be made 9 to 5. You work hard, you grind hard, you're exhausted. You probably won't make enough, but at least you'll make barely enough to survive. But you'll need to borrow and you'll need like, that was the only way you can make money. That is the rules of money. And then you hear stories right. like this where you're making tens of thousands of dollars for sleeping or this or that. And it's like, holy crap. Anything is freaking possible. Gosh, I make money in so many different ways in my OnlyFans. It is a subscription. It's a membership. And then I have dozens of offers within the membership and people just buy them all the time. God, I'm like trying to think of all, I'm like, there's so many ways. Like this is like a classic, but I didn't know this again. I'm a naive religious church girl who's very, very sheltered, like buying underwear. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't understand why someone would buy your underwear, but like people love it. And it's like, okay, like I buy my underwear off of Amazon. It's like, I don't know, $3 or $4 for a pair. And I sell them for $125. So you're making over $100 per pair of underwear. And it's just like things like that. People want to buy my used socks. They want to buy my used lingerie. They want to buy my used shoes. So I buy new shoes. I wear them when they wear out. They pay more than what I paid for those shoes, enough profit for me to buy a new pair. It's just like, it's bizarre. Wow. Like now it's normal for me. But when this was first started, it was like, wait, what? And they would come to me. Can I pay for this? Can I buy this? Would you ever offer this? So it was the exact opposite of what I saw. You have to grind. You got to pitch and pitch and pitch and offer, 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 launch, launch, launch.
Yeah.
And they all come to me. How can I pay you? Can I do this? And now like I took my family to, well, not me, my partner flew my entire family down to Florida for Disney World in May. And one of my fans like, here's hundreds of dollars in cash. Treat your kids. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask. And so this is part of like what OnlyFans has taught me and what I teach my clients is radical receptivity. Do you feel worthy of receiving without working for it? Do you feel worthy of money showing up in your life because it's just your baseline? It's just normal. Yeah. And I feel like my OnlyFans was a baptism into radical receptivity. And it was a complete flip of paradigm. And it's been really healing as someone who's a very hard worker, who's very independent, learning to like soften and like let others step in and bless and provide in ways I never saw coming. It's made it a very holy, sacred, beautiful journey.
I love that. Yeah, because it's like we all love to give, but it's so much more fun to give to someone who's a great receiver.
Yeah.
And you need both energies. And so it's like, if you're not willing to receive or you feel awkward and weird about it, it actually impacts the person that wants to give. Yeah.
It's so true. And something my fans will say is like, because I'm very authentic and I'm very genuine, which I think is also, it can be kind of hard to find on OnlyFans because a lot of girls start it just to make money. To build a community. And so we have a very thriving community of like hardcore, loyal people. They know me so well. I know them so well. It's very unlike most OnlyFans. So I always tell my client, most of my female clients sign up for it. They're like, I have to see this. And it's pretty magical. And a lot of my OnlyFans subscribers join my coaching programs. So there's a lot of like freedom and fluidity and it's because I embody both, and you don't have to choose. I can be spiritual and sexual, right? I can be a mom and a model. I can talk about my kids and talk about your kinks. Like I don't have to choose. And I feel like that's like really what I took back from the patriarchy is like, okay, well, you can either be hot or you can be a good mom, right? You can be viewed as sexy, get compliments, or you can be taken seriously. And I'm like, who says I have to choose? I take the whole package. But inside my OnlyFans, when I do live streams, and I do 2 live streams a week because I love live energy, my fans always compliment how, whether they give a $5 tip or they give $1,000 in tips, I react the same. Mm-hmm. It means the world to me that you would part any of your money for me. If you give a $5 tip, I'm like, oh my God, like it means the world to me. And you give $1,000, oh my God, like. And they feel so like received and appreciated and valued. And I don't try to hide or dim my joy. Like I let it blow me away. And a common this price that I make money off of, I cry when I get tipped. So they tip more on purpose to make me cry more because it impacts me that much. I'm like, oh my God. And so they, now it's a joke in there. They're like, okay, whoever tips first, we're going to keep this tipping train going. So Nicole's bawling her eyes out and I'm usually bawling my eyes out. And it's like their favorite thing. It's like, I never thought I'd get paid to cry, but like,
right,
legit what happens inside this very special community I have.
Thank you for sharing all that. It does feel so special and so sacred. And I think for everyone listening, it's just opening their mind to so many possibilities.
Because you know what's interesting? Like having an OnlyFans has healed me in so many ways and in one massive way in receiving lots of money. For my male subscribers, and I have men, women, and couples in there, which I love. But I do have a vast majority of men, and there is a lot of judgment against men who subscribe. Like they're simps, right? They're losers. They live in their mother's basements, all the dumb stereotypes. My men are very, very successful, devoted partners, devoted parents. Like my OnlyFans has created a healing space for them to receive attention and appreciation and pleasure. Like for me, it was about receiving money, and for them, it's exploring the side, because we talk about how, you know, in the adult industry, if you go to traditional porn sites, for example, there's no connection with the creator. There's no community. Right. There's no stories. There's nothing but just that one experience. When you step into my world, yes, you get the super hot adult stuff, but I care about you and your career and your kids. It's the one place where it's like, they get to talk about not just sex, but also their spirituality. They get to talk not just about their kinks, but also their kids. Like, I feel like it's finally a place for men to bring their full selves. And that is so rare. Men are only allowed to be the providers and work hard. And then they have to secretly sneak off to porn at night. And here in my space, like all of you is welcomed. All of you accepted. Nothing's taboo. Like it's been incredibly healing for them, which is another reason why I love it so much.
That, yeah, it makes so much sense as you're saying it. And it's really fascinating because again, there's so much shame and stigma around sexuality that it's like none of it's okay. It's like no, you're married, but it needs to be like a very like vanilla kind of relationship, and if you're watching porn that's wrong, and if you're, you know, paying a sex worker, that's wrong, and if you're in OnlyFans, that's wrong. And it's like, well, so again, what's the choice? Is it just suppression? But then the suppression usually comes out in a way that is harmful and hurts marriages and hurts people. And so it's like to have this place that's very healing, and it's like you're allowed to explore all of it. And it's like, I'm sure there are, well, I don't know. I'm assuming, you know, there's like a nice boundary, right? Like the fact that it's an online community, there's already a boundary there. You're not in person. I mean, it just creates like a safe space for that kind of exploration.
It really does. And what's interesting, fans can book one-on-one calls with me, and probably anywhere between 50 to 80% of them, so like the vast majority of them, is for personal development work. I've had calls like, how do I better pleasure my partner? I feel so insecure when it comes to a vulva. Like, I don't know what to do. They are hiring me to help their relationship. And this is what people don't see. And like, and if they're a partner for now, they probably freak out their partner that they booked a call with me, but it's not at all what they think. Like, they're like, I want
to
be a partner. It's like, it's so holy, right? Or they're like, I see you crushing it in your coaching business and on OnlyFans. I want to start my own business. What is your best advice for me? They finally have a place where they can talk about anything and everything and get support from it. And it is,
right,
I'm like, we need more spaces like this for men. And yes, I hope like as more people, like our world is always evolving and there's more freedom and we're realizing things are a lot less black and white and way more gray and fluid, that we have spaces for men to discover all their sides and ask all their questions and not be afraid of judgment or taboo or shame.
Yes, 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 yes. Thank you for doing this work. I really hear you that like you're not here for the convincing energy, and I feel that from you. I actually just feel like a lot of certainty and so much self-love and self-acceptance. I'm curious, has like your extended family come on board with that? You were raised in this very religious upbringing. Have they kind of come along for the journey, or has that been kind of a challenge and you've had to move on to some chosen family?
It's been very difficult through the journey because it involved getting divorced. all kind of happened around the same time, like OnlyFans, divorce, COVID. There was just a lot of moving pieces. We moved to a different state. So we like left all our friends and family and people thought we were so crazy. And I understand it was a lot for them to transition. It was a lot for us to transition through. But at least when you're the one going through the transition, you know what's going on underneath. You know the internal, the entire dialogue. They only see the glimpses of the external evidence. And so when that all went down, I lost my entire family and all three of my best friends. And it was devastating. I mean, I don't know if I've ever cried so hard. And I lost my husband for many different reasons, but it was just like all at once. Yeah. And it felt kind of like this rebirth. At first, it felt like death, right? But I always believe there's resurrection after that. There's new life after death, or when it looks like everything's becoming dark, that's when the light comes in. So it was like this rebirth. And it's been, I've been doing it for 4.5 years now. I freaking love it. And I think what they needed to see is, I think people thought I was maybe having an early midlife crisis or marbles have gone insane, like whatever. But now I've been doing it for almost half a decade. And then they realize like how solid I am in it, how beautiful it is, how safe I am. I think they were also concerned, like, I'm going to get murdered. Right. Oh, legit. So now, been 4.5 years, and now my parents and I have just begun reconciling this past summer, which was huge, because I didn't know if I'd ever see them again in my lifetime, because it was too much for them. And now they've realized, oh, like, this isn't a fluke. She's not in danger. This is something she actually feels called to do. They don't agree with it by any means, but they find the conclusion that they would still rather have a relationship with me, which was massive evolution on their part, because when we separated, they said they'd rather be right than have a relationship with me. And that was a blow to me as their daughter. And I said, okay, well, and I said, enjoy your dogma over your daughter, because I just want my family. So when we started reconciling this summer and they said, we just want a relationship with you at the end of the day, that was massive growth on their part. And it was massive growth on mine to see that their rejection of me wasn't because I'm a terrible person. It was just, it was so much, so fast. They did not know how to handle it. And the only way they could was to pull away and kind of recalibrate. And that's actually the best thing that could have happened, because they recalibrated. I got solid in what I am and who I am. And now we're able to meet in a way that I say is power to power. I'm not like, Daddy, please love me. And I'm not powering over like, you better support me. It's like, I'm in my power. You're in your power. And can we let love fill the gaps? And that's the place to be.
Yeah, it reminds me, my favorite Oracle deck is called Sacred Rebels by Alana Fairchild. And can't remember exactly what it says on the card, but essentially there's a certain card where it's talking about like, there's like a new idea. And right now it's just like this little sapling, and it actually does need to be protected. But one day it will be an oak tree. And when it's an oak tree, you don't need to protect it anymore. And so I think it's called New Ideas Guarded Vigilantly. And it's like, when you pull that card, like, they're letting you know it actually is okay to decide like who you're sharing this idea with and who you're letting close to it, because it is a little baby and it could get trampled. And so in a way, maybe it served you also, because you got to anchor into this new identity without the past attachments to who you were. And like you said, trying to please your parents, which like runs so deep in all of it. We're biologically hardwired to try and please our parents for our survival. So for you to just like have a little break from that until this idea and this new identity turned into this oak tree. And now it's like everyone feels that oak tree energy. It feels very solid. It feels very certain. And they understand how to interact with it.
I totally agree. I think when we try to say, like, instead of when we're not brave enough to release, which often we are called to in many different ways along our journey, we accidentally go into convincing mode. Like, I am okay, mom and dad. I am okay, friends. Like, I promise I'm instead of just being okay. So I tell my clients, stop trying to convince them you're okay and get busy being okay. And the evidence will speak for itself. The oak tree will speak for itself. And the way I describe it, it's like a little hatchling. When you're a little baby chick, like, you're vulnerable to the elements. One tiny gust of wind and you're knocked over and you can't get back up. So your job is to incubate until your legs are strong enough to withstand the storm, or until your roots are deep enough like the oak tree. Like, I can handle anything now. I've been through the ringer. And another version of this, when I started it, I was very shy and bashful because, you know, I was afraid of the judgment. And like, I started off very modest and mild and rarely promoted it for a whole year to really start feeling into like, what do I feel comfortable with doing? What am I not comfortable doing? What are the prices that I do like? What are the prices I don't feel good with? Like, And then it was after a year I started my OnlyFans that I went viral with this tagline of pastor turned stripper, and it took the world by storm. And like hundreds of millions of people learned my story, right? And I just had tens of thousands of people flock to my OnlyFans, which is very overwhelming, makes you a lot of money, which is awesome. But it's like, I kept thinking, I am so glad I had a year, because now I can handle the scrutiny and the intensity and the speed with which everyone is forming an opinion about me. But had that happened a week or two or a month or two into this, it would have squashed that sapling so fast. And I don't know if I would have recovered. I see this happen to women. They start, the world is pissed off that a woman does whatever she wants to their body, as they do whatever they can to squash her, and they do squash some of them, and it devastates me. And so this is why I love when I can work with them and like, let's talk, let's prepare before we go open with this, because we got to make sure your legs are as solid as possible before that gust of wind or the big storm comes. So yes, incubate. It's so, so important.
Thank you so much for bringing this conversation forward and sharing your story. Where can people find you and connect with you?
Yes, you can find me on all the socials. You can go to my website, NicoleMitchell.com, where you can find all my links. Nicole is spelled the K-N-I-K-O-L-E. Thank you so much, Emily, for hosting this. And thank you for like helping people be exposed to all the ways that millions can show up, that money can show up, and not limiting ourselves in any way. I love when powerful, successful, wealthy women help other women become powerful, successful, and wealthy. So thank you so much for the work that you do.
Yeah, amen. I mean, I think you've been one of the most creative examples on the show. So thanks for coming on. And just as a final question, can you share with everyone, what does it look like and feel like to be on your joyous path to millions?
It feels so good. Like, it feels so good to make money doing what you love on your terms and create enough of it to have so much freedom in your life. I'm a single mom and I'm home full time. I work from home and I'm able to be there for my kids full time while making a crap ton of money, while feeling the most fulfilled I've ever felt. I'm like, this is how it was always meant to be. So whatever dream you have of the version of wealth that you want and the life that you want to live, I just want to like reiterate what I know Emily reiterates, I'm sure, on every episode. It is unbelievably, wildly possible and doable. And if you're willing to stay the course and put yourself in containers where it is the norm, it can happen a lot faster than you think.
Amazing. Thank you, Nicole. And to everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. Okay, this might be one of my favorite podcast episodes that I have recorded in quite some time. I just freaking loved Nicole. I loved her energy. I loved everything she had to say. I thought it was very thought-provoking and it was so accepting. And she felt so certain in her truth, like everything about it was so delicious. If you felt the way that I did, make sure that you go on Instagram, tag me at MMakesMoney, tag Nicole at Mitchell Nicole, and Nicole is spelled N-I-K-O-L-E. Let her know how much you loved the show. And of course, you can share your takeaways. Here are mine. Number one, pleasure and profit are connected. They absolutely are. We talked about that and where they live in the sacral chakra of the body. But if you're not exploring that connection as a woman, I highly encourage you to start that exploration. Number two, take control of your one precious life. There was something Nicole said to me, and I think it actually was after we were finished recording when we were just chatting, but she was like, I just realized like 10 years of my life had gone by and I wasn't living where I wanted to live and I wasn't feeling how I wanted to feel. And so I just did something about it. And for her, it was like she picked up and moved from the Midwest to California. But it's true, like no one else is going to make our life happen for us. And if this is our only time here, at least in this body, in this iteration, it's up to us to make it what we want it to be. So if there's something in your life you've been wanting to change and you were just thinking that it would change over time and it hasn't, this is your wake-up call. This is your message from the universe that it's time for you to take control and make the change happen. Number three, you can make money doing literally anything. And that was probably one of my favorite things about this conversation, is just that reminder and that expansion of possibility. Even if you hate what Nicole does, it doesn't matter. You don't have to do what she does. But just knowing that there are people that want to pay for literally anything is so expansive. Number four, your work is your art. It's your art. Are you treating it like art? That's a more of a reminder for me probably than anyone else, but maybe you need it too. And number five, find spaces where you can bring your whole self. To me, that was kind of the secret sauce. And what Nicole has done is she created a space where people could bring their whole selves. And she's right. Like, we don't have enough of that in this world. And so find those spaces for yourself first. And then maybe you get to be someone who creates and holds those kinds of spaces for others as well. So thank you, as always, for tuning into the show. It is not lost on me that we all have the same number of hours in the day, that our time is our most precious resource. And the fact that you spent it with me and with Nicole is, you know, just something to be grateful for. And I also want to encourage you to tune in to next week's episode. I'm having one of my business besties, Kimberly Rose Pendleton, back on the show. She's been here once before, but she has now recently published a book. And so I had to get her back on so that she could talk about her book. And we go deep into just like all of the juicy behind the scenes of what it means to get super visible like that and what all of our fears are. So I highly recommend tuning in, and I will talk to you soon. Listeners like you have made this a top 3% global podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, share, and leave a review. I also love hearing listener feedback, so feel free to slide into my DMs on Instagram at @mmakesmoney. If you would like to explore hiring me as your money healer and business mentor, hit the link in the show notes or head to explore.emilywilcox.com. Until next time, I'm sending you all the magic money vibes on your joyous path to millions.